And welcome to the More Than Just a School podcast by Roots to Roots Academy. My name is Karina Thomas Reynolds, and with me is my dear friend, Ramya Seladurai.
In this series, you will learn about the issues that are plaguing our education system today.
You will also receive tips and tricks on how to leverage your child's education to prepare them for the future.
So let's get started.
Welcome to our podcast, More Than Just a School. This is episode 14. And today we just wanted to talk about the integration of AI into education and the impacts that we see from both sides, as we usually always do. Let's just track back to how AI was integrated from the beginning. We spoke about virtual education in our previous podcast and how that has benefited the students a lot, especially over the pandemic, and how everyone was just thrusted into it. And people made it work, even in the workforce as well. Everyone's just had more of a work-life balance because of the whole virtual aspect. So having that flexibility to be able to learn from home had made it very easy for students, for teachers, to be able to stay safe, be healthy, but yet move on with their lives. So in that aspect, virtual education has become a huge part of our lives. And now with the whole talk of ChatGPT, which is an AI, an artificial intelligence that helps students or even the workforce provide pretty much responses in a very human-like manner so that it helps companies to be able to provide solutions as soon as possible for customers or for clients who have questions all around the world and they don't have the workforce to support it.
Right.
But how does this affect education is the real question. And even before this, there were so many resources like for students such as Grammarly, even we use Bon Patron.
I'm surprised you remember that
I use it till this day. I kid you not. Where it's like Grammarly, but for French. And so these resources were always there. They were encouraged back at school, I know for us. And I'm sure there's so many others that has popped up over the years. But there's also been the opposite of like teachers having, like making sure there's no plagiarism. What's the tool for that called again?
Turnitin.
There you go. So there was opposite tools to make sure that they know that you're being completely honest about what you're submitting. And so ChatGPT, similarly, you can create essays based off of a thesis statement that you write. And it sounds human-like to a degree. But also I've heard in universities, they've implemented like this kind of like a Turnitin, but for like ChatGPT. So some people have turned it in and they've received zeros.
Wow.
So there was a lot of talk between like implementing ChatGPT and like some other parents and schools kind of going back and forth between whether or not to keep ChatGPT. Also, there was a teacher who was like, you know, how ChatGPT creates essays. And it allows for, so essentially ChatGPT crawls the internet and takes the information that's on the internet and then puts it into an essay format in a human-like form. And so she was saying if a student is to be taught and to be graded based off of what a bot can do, are we really using the extensivity of a child's ability to learn? Maybe we should upgrade it into a way where maybe we have the ChatGPT write down the essay and then have them tweak it or analyze it and be critical thinkers of what should be better or worse than this.
Right.
Because we've all heard and like we've all seen it when the cell phone came around. It's not like, oh no, this thing is going to like track us, which it really does. But who cares that now? Because it provides like a small computer for you.
But there were conversations eventually about how to integrate that into the classroom.
Exactly.
When originally it was no cell phones.
Exactly. They confiscated it.
Right.
Yeah, but now it's just like, you know what, this is going to be a tool that we're going to use. So in your experience, when you grade, I know a lot of students don't really know about ChatGPT in high school, but I'm sure it's going to come up.
Yes.
Especially already in like universities they're using it. I can't imagine students not using it.
Yeah.
So in your thoughts, what is it that you can change or maybe your pros and cons between the implementation of AI into education?
Oh, it's a huge question.
It is. It's massive. You can break it down however you like, but I think it's so interesting.
So I think we have a really big opportunity here.
Mm-hmm.
And Rami and I have been enjoying these podcasts because it's really been giving us the opportunity to take you on the journey of us starting Roots to Roots Academy, of us really making very conscious decisions of how we want to create our courses to ensure that it is accessible to as many people as possible, to ensure that it resonates as much as possible. And so when I'm thinking about artificial intelligence and how that's used in education, I guess it's easier for me to talk about the cons and what people are saying. And of course, naturally, it's the fact that we're afraid that students will no longer write for themselves.
Right.
I'm even seeing that students can't spell as well as they used to. But we have to really remember that we're just getting out of a pandemic. Also, when we're texting, things are automatically spell checked all of the time.
And short form.
And short formed and everything. Yeah. So it's hard to hold students at the same standards as us after the years that we've just had.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely, I think that's the major concern with ChatGPT, and that this will be a tool that students will maybe overuse and no longer see the need in writing for themselves.
Yeah. So my thoughts here is that, let's, for example, talk about any kind of story that you guys do, maybe Hamlet. But I actually forgot about Hamlet. Let me talk about my story.
I'm going to be honest. I didn't really like Shakespeare.
Right? Like, that's what I'm saying.
I went on No Fear Shakespeare, which was a website that converted Shakespearean language, Victorian, I think it is, into English, standard English, that made it easier for me to understand. But I just read the summaries. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be honest, I feel bad for saying this as a teacher, but I didn't like it. I liked Macbeth.
Yeah.
But for the most part.
So that's what I'm thinking too. It's like, maybe some of the content that's being given to students through a curriculum is not relevant to them to be able to even want to execute to write an essay.
Yeah, fair. Because it's like, if it's something that you're passionate about, of course you're going to want to
do it.
By yourself.
Exactly.
But if it's something like, compare Hamlet and da-da-da, then, I don't know, then you're just going to have ChatGPT do it.
Exactly.
It's true. We take shortcuts for the things that we
don't want to do.
And what is happening with ChatGPT is that teachers are talking about ways around it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the major things is that ChatGPT doesn't have information in its system for
personal
the last
experiences
year
as well.
And personal experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, if you are doing a novel study and you're saying, connect this to your experience, or connect this to this event that happened last week.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you are connecting it to current events that has recently happened or to life experiences, then, of course, you naturally have to write it yourself.
Yeah, which makes sense, honestly. Right. Like, if I were to write about a summary on something that happened 10, 20, 30, 40, 100 years ago, how relevant is the content you're learning?
Right.
It's not.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is a push towards having us, you know, revolutionize education in a way that is still up to date, globalized.
Connecting with the present.
Present. And so students can actually feel like, oh yeah, I heard about this, or I wanted to learn more about this.
Right.
I think it really does push for it in a way that is current.
Yeah. Because at the very least, I mean, they could still speak about the past or the history, but always looking at the past and seeing how that's informed our present and can inform the future.
Yeah. Like, there's a huge thing that my brother keeps saying. It's like, if you don't learn the past, which I'm sure it's a quote, you're going to repeat it in the future.
No, I think your brother was the first to say it.
But yeah, he loves history for that same reason. Yeah. It's just that if you don't know history, you're going to repeat it in the future. And that's just a waste of your time because you've seen what mistakes they've done.
Right.
So it's like, you need to know history, but at the same time, relate it to what you're learning now so that you can, you know, make that similarity, that connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of my connections on LinkedIn made a post that I really appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to test out ChatGPT, and the details are fuzzy, so there might be some inaccuracies here. But I think overall, he asked ChatGPT to create a story of a Black student and their success or something.
Oh, okay, interesting.
So, you know, on the surface, it looks like a pretty fine story. It was talking about a young Black boy who was raised by a single mother, experienced many hardships, entered a English literacy test, failed the first time, but then ended up winning the contest, and there you go. Then ended up getting into the university of his choice.
So, okay.
So on paper, it's like, yeah, it's a pretty...
good story.
Good
story.
Yeah. Spoke about the hardships, really talked about inequities that he might have faced because of his race. But what my LinkedIn connection referred to was this: the fact of the typical assumptions of a Black child, of why was it assumed that he was raised by a single mother?
Yeah.
Why is the whole idea of their story is them overcoming problems based on their race?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it was a story that, in essence, looked very lighthearted, but also seemed to further perpetuate stereotypes.
Yeah, yeah.
So then there were interesting discussions on that thread of some people who were saying...
is this the only content or the most typical content that you find on the internet?
Yeah, or is ChatGPT potentially inherently racist? And, you know, as...
interesting.
As somebody, you know... okay, yeah, we'll go there. A part of my disconnection from social media is the fact that these algorithms do not take into consideration of the amount of content that you're watching, how triggering it is. There is no humanity in considering of what it feels like to watch something that's triggering over and over again. And one of the reasons why Instagram is something that I've taken a pause from is because during George Floyd, I was very into my activism. I was really following the major activists in the States, and it was almost every day.
You would
many
see
times
the
a day
same thing.
I would see Black people dying at the hands of police over and over again. And that is the lack of humanity in an algorithm. And so as much as I was appreciating the comments of them saying, well, it's a testament of society. And it's like, but it's also who's building these things. Who are the people who are building these social media apps? Who are the people who are creating the algorithms for these? And I just can't help but think that if it involved multiple voices from different cultures, different lived experiences, we would have a little bit more foresight of how those resources can be used in a more humane way.
Yeah, and it's so interesting that you mentioned that, because just 2 days ago we were out for my birthday celebration and the boys were saying, yeah, like, I don't go on TikTok. And we're just like, why? And they're like, yeah, just after writing the word male as, like, your identity, the type of contents that they get is very disturbing to them.
Misogynistic. Based off of what they were saying.
Yeah, because they were saying that that's just the assumption that the algorithm has as men wanting to see these types of videos. Right. And it's almost instant. It's almost in your face. And they're saying
that... assuming their sexuality as
well. Yeah, exactly.
Like,
so they're saying
that they're heterosexual.
Yeah, so they're saying that they just can't be on that app because it just tends to further perpetuate them in a direction that they don't want to go into.
Right.
And it's similar facet to you. It's like there's these things where humanity is lacking in the algorithm.
Right.
And if you fall into that trap, you can be led astray and put towards a path that honestly I don't think is very good for society.
Right.
If we have more people who are misogynistic, more people who are just... and the tendency to be racist, like, what are we actually cultivating in these spaces?
And I guess really the huge thing is, as you said, it creates such a huge opportunity for us to really have students who are critical thinkers about mm-hmm. what is it that you're seeing?
Exactly.
Why are you seeing this right now? And what impact is it having on you? And really giving students the space to have those reflections.
Yes, I think that's so important. Like, okay, it's one thing for you to write an essay about your thoughts and having someone be critical about that. But then if we can just move up a step and then see what is out there, mm-hmm. and then connect that to like real life where it's like TikTok, Instagram, all these social media platforms, and have them be critical thinkers of what they're seeing.
Right.
Like, is this what you want in life? Or is this something that they're curating for you? I think ChatGPT could definitely be that
mm-hmm.
route of like just showing you this is the content that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that you perceive from that?
Right. Because at the end of the day, these platforms, it's hard to say it, but it is a necessary evil,
mm-hmm.
and it is a huge opportunity for us to think, okay, these are the dark sides and the dark
yeah.
impacts it can have, but how can we use that for good?
Yeah.
Like, even at my church, we speak of a lot about social media evangelism
mm-hmm.
and how sharing links to our church services on social media with our followers can
mm-hmm.
have a good impact. So it's not that these things are totally bad, but it's really trying to be conscious of how you're using these resources instead of just using them passively.
Exactly. And I think that's the next step that we would need to take in order for students, ourselves even. I feel like because we were in that state, for myself, I'm still on these social media platforms. And it's interesting because if anyone was to go through my algorithm, they will laugh because I have curated my algorithm to just purely give me memes, because that's what I go in there for,
yeah.
to just go in and just laugh and share that laughter and joy with everyone else. And so it's like knowing what's out there, but also curating it in a way that is beneficial to you, in a way that helps you grow. And for me, it's just for fun. And you would then find your information elsewhere. And then having that thought of being like, okay, this platform is for this reason. I would use like CBC and other platforms for my educational content, and being very intentional about the purposes of each of these platforms.
Right.
And then also getting your content in a way that is reputable for yourself as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think, yeah, it's a huge step in a good direction if we take it that way.
Right. Yeah. And in the context of mathematics, I think that's where it could get pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because unlike languages, unlike English and French, you're kind of wondering, where does AI take place? And even as of right now, we have apps that do math for you.
I know.
So,
insane.
For example, if I have an equation like
mm-hmm.
x squared plus 5x plus 6, and if I have that quadratic equation and then I'm like, okay, where's the x-intercept? Where's
yeah.
the y-intercept?
Yeah,
yada,
yeah.
yada, yada. Then you can use an app called Photomath, and the kids know about it, and they take a picture and it solves it for them.
So cool.
But here's the thing, though, is that I don't see my students use it.
No way!
Like, they never use it in class. They want to understand themselves.
That's so good.
And that's the thing, is that I think that when these new things pop up, of course there's going to be students
curious.
Who are going to use
yeah.
PhotoMath for every question. I think that's inevitable. There's always going to be somebody. But the majority,
yeah,
maybe I'm a very naively optimistic teacher, but I genuinely believe that for the most part, our kids are honest.
I think it's true that you say that, because even in the couple of podcasts and news features that I've seen, the students were like, ChatGPT is out there, but I, like, morality kicks them in the butt saying, but I've worked so hard to get into university. Why would I use a computer to generate content for me when I work so hard to get here?
Right.
I want to use my brain to be mm-hmm. able to do it. But I think we can frame it differently in a way where they can still use it, because I do think that's the future and that's how everything gets implemented. We move forward in that way. Otherwise,
mm-hmm.
you have these technologies take over the job that you have because
right.
you haven't implemented them.
Yeah.
But just have them feel more empowered by using them
mm-hmm.
and not feel like they are being blindsided by having them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I'm excited about the idea
mm-hmm.
of artificial intelligence, because I do see a huge opportunity for us to get better at this online learning thing that we still have. And it's hard because I think at the beginning I had the belief that online learning is not good. Online learning, we need to be in person. It was a belief that I had held.
Go back to episode number 4. You'll hear all about it.
But I also had success stories through online learning. It wasn't all terrible. The worst part, which I spoke about in the last podcast, was teaching phys ed online. That shouldn't happen. That shouldn't happen. No. No, sex ed education should be in person.
That's hella awkward. Especially if everyone is a black screen and you're just talking to them. You have no idea how they're reacting. They're probably, like, cringing or they're probably laughing. Yeah. You never know.
No. I don't want that.
But have them watch Big Mouth. Anyhow.
That's it. But definitely, it really lends itself for us to think, did we really figure out how to teach virtually, or did we just take how we teach in person and we did it on a screen?
It's true. Did we do it efficiently?
Right.
And that's the question.
And I would say no.
Yeah.
I would say no. I don't think that we thought about what does student engagement look like on a computer. I don't think that we thought about how can I motivate students in a virtual context so that they feel self-motivated to turn on their cameras. We thought about it, but we didn't master it, of how we could make online learning effective. And at the end of the day, is that, of course, the major drawbacks is that not everybody has access to internet. Not everybody has access to a device. But we are very fortunate that in this day and age, almost every single student in a public school board in the Greater Toronto area gets a device from the school. Almost every single student, even those who don't necessarily need it.
Yeah.
So it does lend itself to a pretty unique opportunity of how can students who live, in neighborhoods that are deemed as less academic still receive an academic experience. And that, so therefore their education isn't dictated by their area code. And that can only happen
if you have it so that everyone's catered in a virtual aspect. It's life-changing. It really is.
So we're going to be honest and transparent. That's our journey of,
of
really thinking about, that's the question we have. We don't have the answers, but just how can artificial intelligence be used in a culturally responsive way? So that students can ensure that they have an educational experience that's tailored to them. And of course that sounds pretty cool. I think it sounds pretty cool, but it's complicated to figure out.
And it takes time.
Yes.
In a way that I think we could put it in a simpler form is like math. I find it is worldwide, globally understood. 1 + 1 = 2 is something that the whole world understands, and there's no barriers in that. You can show your fingers, you get it. And I feel like math is a great way to start that culturally responsive material. And a teacher having to teach 30 students in a classroom with IEP students is very difficult. You don't get that one-on-one experience with them. But if you were able to implement AI in a classroom where that student can then answer questions from lowest tier to what the curriculum requires you to know, and then gauges where that student is supposed to land at, and then tells you, and this AI tells the teacher where the student is and where it needs to be, each student gets their own curated plan for them in order to meet the curriculum standards.
Which fixes the problem that most educators are facing, which is teaching to the middle.
Exactly.
Because we're, and I'm in the process of trying to fix this. I'll go on that tangent in a moment.
No, but you did almost. I think in the classroom, classroom size matters. You did talk about the bell curve that we need to do.
But I mean, I'm trying to fix that.
As,
like, teaching in person.
Oh.
Because essentially, that happens for me as an educator when I'm teaching a class of 30, when I have students with specific learning needs. At least I wasn't able to before. But I wasn't able to teach in a way that honored where the students were if they were not in the middle. Mm-hmm. And those who were above, they were forced to help those who were in the middle mm-hmm. to make sure that we were all together.
Right.
But I'm in the process of going through this Thinking Classrooms mm-hmm. professional development course or program, whatever, in-person sessions.
Yeah.
Where we are just looking at how we can have students work in a collaborative way that still allows those students who are able to move ahead to do that.
And for those who are behind to be able to move to a place where they need to be.
Because at the end of that, the last semester that I just had, it was the first time I taught math mm-hmm. since the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Before I was teaching French language courses, civics and careers, mm-hmm. which frankly isn't as demanding as teaching math, just to be honest.
Just because the curriculum bends a little bit more for other aspects, whereas you have to meet a specific standard for mathematics.
That's it. But also because with the students who are diagnosed with ADHD, mm-hmm. statistically, and it's been proven that mathematics is an area with these students who struggle. Mm-hmm. So that shows up in a more intense way in a mathematics class than it does maybe in an art class.
Right.
So I'm in the process of thinking, without students feeling bad about it, though.
Yes.
Right?
That's the hard part.
But allowing students to move at the pace that they want.
Yeah.
To keep them engaged, because what happens is that when they're moving too fast or too slow, then they become disengaged. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think that I'm figuring it out. I think that I just finished my first week of teaching in person and trying some of these Thinking Classroom principles.
Yeah.
And I am seeing students who are asking more questions than they ever have before.
That's awesome.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
But I've also just changed my approach of, instead of me telling them, okay, this is how you solve this equation, mm-hmm. I just give it to them. And I'm like, figure it out.
Yeah.
And then they ask me questions along the way, and I'm not like, oh, don't talk to me. You know? But no, I speak to them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I say, okay, like, what are your questions? And then,
yeah.
Of course, they want to get it. They want to get it. They want to move on.
Yes.
Naturally, we have that instinct of not wanting to stay put. But I also am starting, because, I mean, a lot of context, but the reason why last semester was hard because I didn't have my students at the beginning, so I wasn't really able to set the tone the way I wanted it. But now I'm able to see where they're at. So now I'm actually kind of starting them with like harder things, quote unquote. Like I introduce word problems to them first and they do it in groups. And I'm not focused on them answering it perfectly, mm-hmm. but more so of seeing if they're able to understand the context of the question, because mm-hmm. what we traditionally do in a mathematics classroom is that the teacher goes up, they do a lesson, and then they say, okay, I've shown you how to do this, now you copy what I've done.
Mm-hmm.
Go. And then they do that in an abstract way. So I'll start off with an equation of y equals mx plus b, and then the students will be like, but what does this mean in the real world? And then I would say, well, wait, because we're going to have word problems at the end of the unit that'll compare it to real life. And it does make you think, like, why do we wait until the end of a unit
to relate it to back to what it is that you see it as?
Yep. Right. So instead, I'm flipping it of introducing what this looks like in real life first, and then going through the more abstract concepts to return back to how it relates to real life. So a bit of a sandwich. But I'm saying all this to say is that, like, that takes time.
Yeah.
That takes time for teachers to plan, too.
Mm-hmm.
And also, at the end of the day, it's still delivered in a way that's not really personalized. Because what resonates with me and how I might teach might not resonate with the lived experiences of another student who might have different experiences. I try to keep in mind that I'm speaking to teenagers, mm-hmm. so I make references that I think are pretty like relevant.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an old lady yet, mm-hmm. but I'm getting there.
The more tenured you are.
but yeah, I don't know. So I think that's where artificial intelligence can really come in, is being able to introduce topics in a way, but that's fun. And then also making sure that they're working towards those rudimentary skills.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it's like when you do a level in a game.
Yeah.
And then
building upon your character.
That's it.
Because you've built that character.
That's
you it. Were able to personalize that character in a way that is relevant to you, giving it a name, customizing it how it looks, maybe even giving it a bit of a backstory.
Yeah.
And then moving forward with the game that you have no idea, but you have a basis of your identity of who you are in that game,
mm-hmm.
and be able to put forth your spin on the adventure that they have given
right.
it to you.
And it is kind of getting to the point where it's like, does math need to be paper to pen all the time? We still have tests as one of the major assessments, but really in the education community, it's something that we're going against. There are some people who believe that test taking and quizzes is a colonial practice because it's a way of, once again, taking that one point in time of a student being able to show their knowledge for a whole unit or even for a whole entire course.
Yeah.
It's set in a way that might not always be fair.
And if I'm looking back at it, of course you need to build upon skills over skills in order to understand how to be a critical thinker. But if a robot or an artificial intelligence is able to mimic your test and do it better, are you really expanding your knowledge as a human being who is creating these artificial intelligence to be better than it when you're lacking in that sense? I feel like there are other ways in which we can understand a concept but improve on it in a way that artificial just cannot.
Right. And I think what differentiates that is just the humane aspect of actually taking into consideration that artificial intelligence can be an individual experience.
Yeah.
And also to give the power back to the people.
Yeah.
Instead of having the people adjust to the system.
Exactly. The greatest way of doing that is personalizing it.
Right.
Like, how does this concept relate to you as an individual, and how do you see it on an everyday, like almost making them create that word problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, this is the concept, this is the equation, this is the answer.
Because
right. that's what artificial intelligence creates.
Yes.
And then taking that and being like, okay, so how does this work in a setting that is relevant to you?
Right. We got to make them think.
Yeah. And that's what it is.
That's it. And I think that makes all the difference, is that I think the way that I learned math, if I'm being honest, was what we call mimicking.
Yep.
Me watching what my teacher did. I knew what I needed to do to make them happy.
Yeah.
To make them like me. So I adjusted.
Yeah.
That's what we did.
All of STEM is regurgitating, honestly.
But it's not that, you know? It's not.
And I think that's where it really hurts for people who are creative minds. People who are naturally very, I think humans in general, and I don't want to just, you know, isolate it to some. I think everyone's creative in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's able to do something very special with themselves. And just limiting it to a certain standard that needs to be met really does eliminate that spark that everyone has.
Yeah. You know, I will disagree, because there are some people who I speak to about math. And then when I speak about my interest in ethnomathematics and the connection between math and culture and how we can really see how different cultures are a part of the field of mathematics, some of the feedback that I get, Ramya,
really,
is like, oh man, I thought math was the one thing where you could either be right or wrong.
Huh.
So there are some people who find a lot of joy in the simplicity of just being right or wrong.
I think it is still right or wrong.
Yeah.
I still think that if there's a question, there is only one right answer.
But I guess what I'm trying to say is
the method in which you get there?
Well, I guess the humanity of it. Like, it's just numbers. You know, some people find joy in the fact that it's just numbers, and they don't really necessarily care about it being linked to their real life experiences. They don't really care, you know? And in the podcast for Creative Mind,
yeah.
I think that that's what we were talking about, of like, a creative mind is somebody who needs that in order to make sense of their world. Like, they need to feel a connection with what they're learning.
Mm-hmm.
But like, what we need to recognize is that, like, many kids are still, I'll be careful with how I say that. I think kids are still succeeding in the way things are being done, and kids have found comfort in the way things are being done, mm-hmm. but it doesn't necessarily mean that it was the best way for them.
But if we are incorporating artificial intelligence, right or wrong is something that they can do.
Yeah.
You don't need a person to be able to identify that anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think, yes, that can be definitely something that someone is appreciative of, mm-hmm. because there is no ambiguity in solving an equation where you right. just know that it is right or wrong.
Right.
But when you have something that is able to take your place in that matter, you have to bring something that makes you special.
Right. Fair.
I don't know. I think in a way it makes them more of a critical thinker to figure out what is it that you can make simple from something that already takes the math out of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
Question for thought. Food for thought.
Food I don't for know. Thought.
Yeah. I have nothing more to say, honestly. No. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Artificial intelligence is only going to grow. I don't know if we're going to grow before it or it will take over us. Who knows?
And I just think it's a huge opportunity for us to... I think that we're kind of in a new...
Era,
yeah. like a technological boom. Mm-hmm. That is what's happening. I even met somebody who is in the process of creating a business that will be distributing groceries from a building and all by robots. Like, so therefore you could have like Amazon basically mm-hmm. like style, like dropping things at your door, but for groceries that isn't dictated by people at all, but purely by machines.
Weight would play a factor then. I can't imagine a machine carrying a Tide. You
listen.
Know. I'm thinking anything? That these are flying drones going
no,
around
no, no.
places.
It's like maybe like robotic arms taking it off the shelf, bringing it to the bag, and then it going into the... So anyway, all this to say is that this is a very unique opportunity where we get to have the chance to reimagine how can we use technology to help rectify the problems that we've seen in our brick and mortar schools.
Yeah, and also it gives us an opportunity to elevate all of humankind. If we are eliminated from doing, let's say, labor or manual labor, that forces our people to... become, I don't know, technicians or in a way that works with machines right. side by side.
You know, you just brought something up that I thought is that, right, at the end of the day, the technological boom will impact minority communities the most and mm-hmm. will take most of their jobs.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So.
Womp womp.
There is more of a push.
There's more of a push.
For them to actually understand
how to use technology for their benefit.
Yeah. Essentially, the older generations will have a little bit of a harder time, especially if they haven't been connected to technology for a while, mm-hmm. to be able to bridge that gap that they will see in the future. That it's almost like in the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory scenario where his father was taken over by a robot and then he lost his job, but then he came back as a technician for that robot mm-hmm. and was able to still keep a job because he created it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like pushing everyone to kind of go that direction. But then you also have to think, okay, are all of these people getting that education that they need in order to, you mm-hmm. know, supersede that?
And not just for a job, but exactly. for the benefit of their community, yep. of their families. So at Roots Roots Academy, we will be offering a grade 9 high school credit course yep. this summer.
It's just to allow students to be critical thinkers, and that's the thing that we want everyone to understand. Whether it's through AI, whether it's in person, whether it's virtual, it's just being able to have students to understand what they're being taught and to be able to relate it to themselves and see where they fit in all of this. So that they can go into a workforce and be able to say, yes, this is what I want, or no, this is wrong, mm-hmm. and speak up for themselves. Because that is something that I just see Gen Z in general doing on a day-to-day basis. Right. So why not have a curriculum that reflects that personality, that willingness to be that change, and have them grow to only be better versions of themselves, and a better version for all generations, to be honest, because we all need it.
Right.
And reality check.
And with the grade 9 mathematics being streamed, once again, that does lend to a unique opportunity for us to think about how artificial intelligence can be used in order to ensure that students who find themselves in various levels within each different subject in mathematics, and how we can ensure that they are able to build those skills in a meaningful way that resonates with their experiences.
And it's not just being able to achieve the credit, but being able to understand where they fit in the curriculum and how they're going to approach their high school career just a little earlier than everyone else, because you're grade 8 when you take this course in the summer, and then you would be having a high school teacher teach you the curriculum prior to you entering high school. So you can enter, if you have the anxieties and like the feelings of math being something that you are uncomfortable with, but having that under your belt first thing when you enter high school just gives you that extra confidence and push to be able to go into high school and be like, yeah, I got this, you know, and have that spare and being able to take other electives that will further expand your creative aspect or what you want to pursue in both the high school curriculum or even in your future endeavors. Yeah. And I think that is something that I could only have wished for myself.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we're creating for you. So we just want to say thank you so much.
Please follow us on our socials or even just sign up for our newsletter. Check us out there. We do give our first come, first serve basis for this course very soon. And you guys will be the first to know. So I hope to talk to you soon, and we'll see you next time.
Take care.
If you liked this episode and would like to learn more, you can find the transcript and related blog posts on our website, roots2roots.ca.
You can also subscribe to this series on Spotify or wherever else you prefer to listen to your favorite podcasts.
At Roots to Roots Academy, we offer high school credit programs for public school students because we believe that students from all cultural backgrounds deserve an education that is relevant to their personal interests, academic aspirations, and cultural values.
We are rooted in the belief that educating parents about the education system provides more roots for their child's future.
So, don't be a stranger. We would love to get to know you. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and TikTok to share your thoughts about this episode and to receive updates on our new content.
I'm Karina Thomas Reynolds.
I'm Ramya Seladurai.
And together, we're the co-founders of Roots to Roots Academy. Thank you for listening.
And until next time, take care.